Do you have a loved one that might need a little extra care? Check out Regency on the Lake. Located in Fort Gratiot, Regency on the Lake offers the latest healthcare services with rehab, respite, and long-term care. 810-385-7260.
All right, 10 past 9 o'clock on this Wednesday morning. You remember that case in late 2022? Four University of Idaho students were brutally murdered in the middle of the night. And this case captured national attention after an intense investigation. Brian Koberger was charged, and he eventually pled guilty to the crime. So no trial, but no answers to a lot of questions. Our next guest has written a book where he seeks answers, gets some. Former FBI agent, journalist, best-selling author Christopher Whitcomb here to talk about his book, Broken Plea, Explosive Search for the Truth Behind the Idaho Murders. Christopher, good morning.
Good morning, Paul.
What was the biggest question that you had that led you to write this book?
You know, I didn't even have any questions about this because I never really knew much of anything about the case until a friend of mine in law enforcement who was really familiar with it called me and told me about giant gaps in what he perceived to be the public narrative, what we were learning about this case. And when I looked into it, I found that was the case. And the gaps would be things that did not come out in trial. As you said, there was no trial. So we know almost nothing about the means, the motive, the mechanism of how these crimes occurred. And the more I looked, the more I questioned the public narrative. And that's really what this book is all about.
Well, the biggest question is motive, and there never really seemed to be a clear answer as to what Brian Koberger's motive was. What have you learned about him?
Well, let's start with what the public knew beforehand, and that is that the prosecution never tied him to these four victims in any way. Four college students in Moscow, Idaho. He was a PhD candidate not far away in Washington, in Pullman, Washington. But these crimes, and we look at the behavioral aspects of a crime as well as the forensic elements, and the motive acted out upon these college students was not robbery. It was not sexually motivated. And these are all statements by the prosecution, by the way. So they being law enforcement and the prosecution, never explained how at 4:30 in the morning, 4:15 in the morning, on a Sunday, just before Thanksgiving vacation, somebody broke into this house and arbitrarily killed four vibrant young souls. And that was the first and the biggest question people ask, and it's never been resolved. When you go to trial or go to a plea agreement like this, oftentimes they'll require what's called allocution, meaning you have to, as a condition of the plea, stand up and say what you did and why you did it. That never happened. We will never know from Koberger, because he's in prison for the rest of his life, why he did it. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't. What about the police work? Were there any errors or flaws that you saw in the work the police did?
First of all, the police investigation was vast. It was extensive. It was remarkable in its scope. It went all the way from DNA to cell tower pings to vehicle identification. Though it's not been talked about a lot, police zeroed in on at least 10 persons of interest that became, in their own documents, called suspects along the way, leading to Koberger, and then everything focused on him, of course. But the mistakes along the way are endemic to any police investigation. I don't care if it's federal, state, or local. You see them in the FBI, my old background. You see them in local law enforcement. My brother was a cop. So I don't knock the police investigation, but I do have to point out what the defense would have leaned on if it had gone to trial. And there are quite a number of things that people previously did not know about.
Such as, what did you uncover?
The first thing is the DNA. People now that know the case realize Bill Thompson, the prosecutor, stood up in court at the change of plea hearing and identified the evidence. The first was the white car, which he says he ties to Koberger. The second was cell tower pings, a common investigative technique. When a crime occurs now, a lot of times the FBI will come in, they'll dump the cell towers, and they'll identify, triangulate calls, and that helps. The third is DNA. Most people who know this case think the FBI found DNA from Brian Koberger on the knife sheath. This book points out that the lead investigator in what's called a Franks hearing said, was asked specifically and said the FBI never stated that Brian Koberger's DNA was found on the knife sheath. That's explosive. Mm. That's the type of stuff that we talk about in the book.
Really, really interesting. Do you have a theory, like after all this research and writing this book, do you have a theory as to what might have happened that we just don't know for sure?
The short answer is no, but I got to qualify it and say, I wrote this book like a grand jury presentation. If I were an FBI agent building a case, I wanted to build a case for the reader in the same logical, meaningful way. So I don't make a lot of theories, speculation, conjecture, any of those things. I don't think they contribute to it. But I believe after reading the book, the vast majority of people I talk to, the first thing they say is, it is extremely likely there was a second person involved. Therefore, we get past Brian Koberger and say, well, he pled guilty. Yes, he did. Does the crime scene suggest very, very strongly that somebody else was involved? In my opinion, the answer is yes. And that is very troubling to me. You cannot solve a murder if you get 50% of the people involved. And I do not have a theory, but I think the evidence strongly shows that.
Broken plea, explosive search for the truth behind the Idaho murders. Christopher, great talking to you. Appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, bye-bye.